You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey guys, welcome. This is The Fifth Element. This is a movie that happened one time, and I guess we're going to talk about it. It's still weird. If you remember seeing it in the 90s and it was weird, you're right. It's entertaining. It's Bruce Willis being kind of Bruce Willis-y. And it's... wow. There's so much about this that makes it 90s. There is Chris Tucker, who was a thing in the 90s. There was... Bruce Willis has frosted tips, which makes it the 90s. It's a lot of stuff, man. And Luc Besson wasn't a rapist yet, so that was also in the 90s. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this episode. What else? July 5th, I'm doing Rocky 4 with Cineprop. You should come out and see me if you're in the Atlanta area. Join the ESO Network Patreon. I have stuff on it now. Myopia stuff, specifically. We did a Zaction movie for it. And then finally, we're nearing the end of our season, which is exciting. This is the second to last Myopia movie before we're down for the count, so to speak. We're out for the summer. So with that in mind, please, please, please share us. We'll start in August with a new season, which is exciting. But we want to come back with a bang. So review, rate, share. During July, we're going to have a few reruns. But in the new season, we're going to release more. So we are motivated by your love and support and sharing. So please do that for us. Thanks.
Haven't been listening to the Revcast? Here's what you're missing.
The sharks have an economy based on gold?
Apparently.
You have a shark like decked out like Mr. T with the bling all over
it. Oh, now I want to see that. I want somebody to draw a picture of a shark with a mohawk. I pity the fool.
I'm done.
The Revcast by RevolutionSF.com. Available at RevolutionSF.com, iTunes, and part of the ESO Network.
Welcome to Happy Defender Childhood! This week, we watched 1990-something. Seven. I looked this up. I remember. 1997, Luc Besson something. Fifth Element, the prequel to Valerian. I'm Nick Hoffman. You're laughing because I told you. It was your joke. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Open Defender Childhood and riffer on Cineprov. And on panel, we have Lauren, who's losing her mic.
Lauren.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Daniel, writer at Pop Dose, and currently a guy smuggling several large stones up his ass.
Gross. How am I supposed to follow that? Jeremy.
Darbles, got a multipass, and here I am.
Yeah, multi-pass. Has anyone seen my pants? Because Bruce Willis just stole them.
Oh my God, honey, how could you go to that paradise planet without me?
That's not what his mother sounds like, but that's just how I heard her.
Harvey Fierstein? Yeah.
I was trying to find his actual hairline the whole movie, so...
Well, you could tell this movie is 1997 for two reasons. First of all, he's bleached blonde like he's the front man of Smash Mouth.
Well, he still has hair.
Oh, that was so a hairpiece. Come on. He's had a hairpiece since Die Hard 2. Come on.
That's not wrong.
Hi, this is Bruce Willis for Hair Club for Men.
Fuck this shit. Stein for Hair Club for Men. I need to feel fresh at the end of every day, and I put some dye in my hair.
The idea that Harvey Fierstein has lost a hair on his head, on anywhere on his body, the man. He was a stand-in for a Wookiee. Him and Robin Williams. Jesus Christ.
Do you want to hear me do a Wookiee noise?
Oh, God, no.
Spare me.
You've dried up any sexual drive I have in me. So, The Fifth Element. Had anyone seen this movie before? I saw it at a friend's house in seventh grade, and I didn't get it.
I saw it in theaters.
And?
And,
No, I saw it.
And?
I got a lot more this time around. Now that, yeah.
I saw it sometime around 2009, I think. And originally, I'm like, all right, I get what you're trying to do. I'm not sure if you actually did it.
I saw it for the first time today after about 80 people told me to watch it, so...
It is one that people have feelings about, which is weird.
Yeah.
Not like it's weird that people get emotional, but this movie in particular, it's weird people get emotions behind.
I checked it, and doesn't it have like a 7.7 on the Tribune?
It does. It's actually surprisingly well-liked.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for podcasts, I think it'd be a forgotten movie in some ways. Whatever.
It has a lot of memorable visuals, though.
It does. It looks like an opera house.
It's one of those things, though, where it really, it feels like it was written by, like, a 14-year-old nerd in his, like, notebook.
He did write the first draft when he was 16.
Yeah.
Really?
That's true. All right. Too, yeah.
Well, and, okay, so he wrote the first draft when he was 16. Believable.
And he didn't write a subsequent draft, apparently.
Well, it was clearly based on every movie he had seen, because there's scenes from Blade Runner, Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
There's references to everything.
One of the military women has Leia's haircut.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's the metallic alien race from the beginning of the movie kind of look like the old robots from, like, Forbidden Planet in the 50s sci-fi movies.
It does. You're not wrong. Like, and
it's funny how they were ripped off to look like the Vogan in that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie later.
Yeah. Yep, you're right.
Ew, gross.
I know.
That's a stay tuned. That movie disappointed the hell out of me because I love that book, and then that movie happened.
I remember being in theaters for that. Everybody, oh, not everybody, but a couple people came in with a towel around their neck. It was great.
I was just disappointed. That was a movie. Okay, we will talk about that when we get to it. This movie baffled me. And, you know, it's one of those things, again, I saw it at probably like a friend's house. He was a guy with an older brother, so we got a lot of those R-rated movies, and he's like, we should watch Fifth Element. So I was expecting, well, there's nudity in this for no reason.
PG-13 nudity.
Yes.
Weird, right?
Yeah. Because
Mila Jovovich, is it that she has no boobs? So they're just like, yeah, it doesn't count.
I was going to ask you guys what y'all thought of Mila. She had
They were telling us she was perfect. I wasn't convinced.
Right.
Because you could see her dyed roots the entire time. HD does not do this movie any favors.
The thermal strips? Yeah. I know what my Halloween costume is.
Thermal strips. I'm just glad that it inspired a generation of cosplayers. So, well done, movie.
You're glad it didn't?
It did.
Oh, yeah. No, I get you.
Okay, so she doesn't do it for you guys.
No.
She's pretty. Yeah, she's very
fine.
Pretty.
She's fine.
Guy with the acne scars is really creepy. Like, the one...
Which guy?
Okay, the guy when they're recreating her in the tube, the guy with, like, the bad acne scars.
Yeah. Oh, that guy.
He's just like, she's perfect. And you're just like, guy, man, do you need a minute? Do you need just a second?
Do you need a private
moment
booth?
Alone here?
Her not boobs are in your, like, vision, and it's something.
I don't get out much.
Clearly.
Hey, I admire that. I mean, would any of us have been brave enough to film that scene completely naked? I don't think so.
Hey, don't kink shame tube girls.
I liked the little gag where they always turned around whenever she was changing. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I like that too.
Ian Holm as the priest guy is just like, he's so adorably befuddled every time she just gets naked.
Yeah.
Women have genitals.
Well, okay, so we've talked already a lot for nothing. Daniel, what's the plot synopsis here?
Okay, so... Apparently, there's this mystical thing that can destroy the absolute evil of the universe. And in the 23rd century, that absolute evil forms and is coming to Earth. And what they need is four element stones: Earth, Wind, Fire, and
Heart
Tenor.
Go Planet!
I was going to make an Earth, Wind, and Fire joke, but you beat me to
and
that.
The power of love, don't forget.
Yes. It's well, power. Getting to that, it's what? Earth,
dry
wind,
humping.
Fire, and water.
First base
and,
in it.
And they also need a fifth element, which is Mila Jovovich's Lilu. And she is recreated in a lab, but escapes and falls into, I want to say it's Harry Canyon's cab, but that's from Heavy Metal. I forget what this character's name is, but it's Bruce Willis.
And Dallas.
Corbin Dallas.
Thank you. Come on.
So anyway, he gets dragged into a an ancient conspiracy involving this religious cult that's meant to reunite the five elements and destroy this ultimate evil that threatens the Earth and, in fact, the universe.
Yeah, the great evil that is supposed to destroy all life.
Yes, but somehow is able to have bribes, which I forgot. Gary Oldman's in this as like a trillionaire businessman who still is trying to get money from this ultimate evil.
With a very convincing Southern dialect.
Yeah, by getting the stones
Why
first.
Does he sound like every Southern preacher?
Because he needed to build a new bathroom in his house.
Does he not sound like a Southern Baptist preacher?
Well, no. I do not know why I sound like a Southern Baptist
Academy
preacher.
Academy Award winner Gary Oldman, he always delivers a brilliant villain performances. That's half the reason I watched this movie. I mean,
well, it's because he was in Leon the Professional.
Leon the Professional.
Which is a great movie.
And
Air Force One.
Well, the whole reason he was in this is because Luc Besson financed his like directorial debut, and he's like, okay, you produced it, so I'll return the favor.
So how do you explain Lost in Space?
The next year.
He needed to build a new bathroom.
My God, you're right. Okay, so my thing is, this is what happens when someone tries to make Scary Movie, but they aren't funny. Okay.
Oh, so Epic Movie or Meet the Spartans?
Or Date Movie.
Any parody movie.
Or Scary Movie 2, 3, or 4.
Or An American Carol. Or we can do this all day.
But he rips off everything. And you said he sounds like a Southern preacher. And you're right. This was the year after Robert Duvall did that shitty movie where he's a preacher.
Oh, that Scarlet Letter version?
No. The one where he's convicted of murder.
Right.
Oh.
The
Apostle. The Apostle was 97.
I tried to forget about it anyway.
1994 is Stargate, and that's how this movie starts. It starts with Stargate. They're looking at an ancient pyramid, and there's a drawing on the wall.
Yeah, I totally thought I was watching Stargate.
And Luke Perry's
Luke
in like
Perry.
That one scene.
Luke Perry, baby.
And he's in the front credits, and Luke Perry.
He's in the front credits, and he's in it for like two minutes.
It's a big deal that he's in it.
But you know what? They're right, because it's and Luke Perry, and he's dead at the end of that first scene.
My second favorite Perry, so it's a big deal. Big deal.
Matthew Perry?
Matthew Perry, yeah.
Well, he's got a friend in you. The Krastowski fortune needed to be revitalized somehow, so.
I'll tell you what, that first scene is so great because he's like, don't figure it out, don't figure it out. A guy tries to drug him, and he's like, we need a toast with wine! And then the aliens land and fucking ruin his day. It's kind of the best episode of the X-Files ever that's not an episode of the X-Files. It's kind of like the aliens come up and tap Fox Mulder on the shoulders like, you know, ancient aliens solved everything.
So this is like a long pre-credit sequence where it's like at the early 20th century and it's Luke Perry and his uncle, his mentor, his professor, his...
They call him the professor. I'm going to just say the professor.
Is in like one of the great pyramids of Giza and...
they discovered something which hadn't been figured out before somehow.
Yeah, and then aliens show up in...
Right.
Get trapped in the Great Pyramid, but there's apparently already a religious cult out there that's meant to protect this knowledge. So, hey...
Well, and
I've already done The Mummy, so I'm not really sure what else I can add here.
Which came out the year after this, actually. So that's something that's borrowed from it, actually.
Oh, there you go.
And then from that, we jump 400 years into the future, or 300 years? 300 years.
300 years, yeah.
2214.
And we get to the aliens returning to save the day from this, whatever, this black ball of evil, this space orb thing.
Yeah, we know nothing about it. Yep.
We know nothing about it. Oh, and I guess the first scene we actually get is the military trying to blast this thing out of the sky.
With Tiny Zeus Lester as the president of the Galactic Federation leading the way, which is awesome.
I think it's kind of cool that a movie from 1997 had an African-American president. I don't know.
Well, here's the problem. That's how we used to tell it was the future. Yep. If there was a black president, it was the future. And then unfortunately, we had a black president. So how do we know now? A lady president?
Watch it.
I mean, but honestly, it's true. Like, I was thinking about it.
That is how
I guess an Asian president? Like,
what was that spoof movie with the Sarah Palin president about the Nazis on the moon?
What? Did she start having sex with him? Because then I might not have seen it.
I don't recall sex with him. I just recall there being Nazis on the moon and they want to come back to Earth. And essentially, Sarah Palin or someone very close to her.
Revenge of the Moon Nazis. Yeah. Yep. knit, not enough.
I'll figure it out eventually.
No, that is how you would be able to tell the future. You're right. And the flying cars.
And the flying cars.
Blade Runner cars.
The Blade Runner cars.
How the hell do we not have that?
By the way,
well, besides Tesla, I guess. But how do we not
really be driving?
It would be very dangerous.
The lead military guy, the lead military guy, was the replicant in Blade Runner.
Yes.
Yeah. Fun fact.
Mm. Which one? There was
the one in the opening scene. The one who's like tortoise. What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, Leon, right?
Leon. That's it. Yep. Leon. Again,
this movie borrows from everything. I have like at least 20 movies that we stole from.
Lizard aliens, yeah.
And Brazil eventually as well. Yeah. And
right, Brazil.
You mentioned it was the year before, or it was Lost in Space was the year before this or the year after this?
Yeah. Year after.
Gary Oldman is doing some shit sci-fi this era where he wants to be an American. His accent is worse than Benedict Cumberbatch in Doctor Strange.
When you buy from Zor, you buy from the best. Or
I would like to be an American.
Well, is that better?
Can I order
Alan Rickman's American accent
to
Die Hard?
Worse.
I thought Alan Rickman was.
He was doing a joke. He was playing an American. Yeah, pretending to be American. Yeah.
But speaking of, we do get the Die Hard scene when they're in the bar area beneath.
Oh God, please help me. Yeah.
Oh God.
I thought the Die Hard scene was the scene where that mugger's like got the gun pointed at him. It's like, well, it's not turned on. You got to press the yellow button.
You mean not...
Where he has the hat with the...
Yeah, that thing.
Not John Leguizamo is trying to lose his shit.
Is that John Leguizamo?
No, it's not, but it looked like him.
So the whole point is that Corbin Dallas is a down-on-his-luck protagonist. I know it sounds weird, but bear with me here. He's a down-on-his-luck protagonist who's a taxi driver that was a former mercenary or special commando.
Yes, because he had pictures on his shelf.
Yes, he's only got like 3 points left on his license, and once you hit 0 points, your cab automatically shuts down. So
also, Brooklyn hasn't changed any, so they nailed that future.
There's a McDonald's here,
right?
A double golden,
and the logo's pointed out.
Yes.
Yep. Do you think we'll still have McDonald's in 2214?
Yes.
Yeah. McDonald's will survive us all
till the end of time. Yeah.
It's gonna be the first franchise on the moon.
Cockroach
and everyone. Well, everyone smokes still. Anyone else notice that?
I did.
I thought that was interesting.
Dallas is trying to quit, so he only allows himself 4 cigarettes a day.
Okay.
Right.
Patty and Selma quit on The Simpsons too.
Everyone's gonna be vaping. Yeah. Pretty much.
The sixth element.
We need the sixth element.
Well, that already exists. It's Valerian in the City of the Thousand Planets.
Oh, God, what a crap! What is
it? Did anybody see that? I didn't see it.
I've seen 40 minutes of it. It's on Amazon Prime.
It's literally a wet blanket of a movie. Like, I started watching it, I'm just like, I feel heavier. Like, I just, anything else, Amazon Prime has to have better than this. And that was the end of my thought.
You need to see only the first 3 minutes of it, because it's the building of a space station set to Space Oddity by Bowie. So
now,
do
they introduce their only female character by being completely naked? Because that was his choice here.
She's in a bikini.
I used to fight for Dane DeHaan, but I don't know if I should.
Well, actually, no.
I don't know if I should anymore.
There's that alien woman that's got the clear top on, but she doesn't have any nipples, so.
So you can get away with it.
You can get away with it. It's PG-13.
Breasts apparently are the pinnacle of evolution, but nipples not necessary if you're not a mammal, right? It's science. It's science. That I've learned science. Ninth grade with Mr. Laurie's science. Name checking my biology teacher. After an alien spacecraft crashes, right? The good aliens return to help us save the day from the black space ooze, right? But some bad guy aliens show up and shoot it out of the sky. It crashes into Earth. Everyone dies except for a few living cells inside of the sarcophagi, which is the fifth element.
Yes.
They take it to a CGI lab that CGI reconstructs her into a CGI person called Lilu, which is played by Mila Jovovich, who is doing her best when two-thirds of her dialogue is bleeps and blorps.
I can imagine how great that CGI looked in 1997, but now it just looks like a cartoon.
The practical effects aged well, but the CG?
Not so much.
Directors need to learn.
It really with non-CGI.
No, it would have been impossible.
Because it really does start with they build her skeleton, they build the tissue on top, they build her skin, and suddenly naked Mila Jovovich is in the movie.
The power of Microsoft Windows.
I was going to say, I had that. It came with my Packard Bell computer. It was called The Human Body. It was a CD-ROM.
Do you think Clippy showed up and was like, it looks like you're trying to reconstruct an alien. Would you like some help?
That's the scary movie version. He's past that. He's Luc Besson.
Ah.
He's worked with Jared Leto. No, Jean Reno.
Jared Leto? Jesus. Did you seriously just confuse Jared Leto with Jean Reno?
It was a joke-em-up. Who was the woman? Natalie Portman. It was a baby Natalie Portman who was in the Professional. Or Leon the Professional, whichever. Yeah. Whatever they call it here in the States now.
Yes.
After reconstructing her, she punches through...
Matilda.
Yes. I remember. After that, she punches through a brick wall and then apparently gold tinfoil and falls 30 floors through Bruce Willis's cap.
Yes.
And he says
and
Monday
is... a point from his license as well.
For getting into a car accident?
Yep.
And then he says Mondays and eats a lasagna and goes home.
Well, no, he drives past that McDonald's where the cops are... And they give chase, and he loses another point on his license.
And then he's fired.
Yeah. But he worked for the Zorg Corporation. Anyone else notice that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Ooh, I didn't pick that up.
This again, sci-fi standard. Big corporations are... Like, this is literally everything. This is Blade Runner 2. This is kind of Dune. This is garbage.
Well, I was telling you before we started recording about how that French comic book artist Moebius, which I probably completely botched that pronunciation, sued Luc Besson and the producers over this for plagiarizing all of his visuals.
Yeah. Well, they even borrowed from the crappy 1995 Judge Dredd movie with Stallone.
Yeah.
That would make sense of them ripping off the Judge Dredd comics. I refuse to acknowledge the 95 movie exists.
We can go comics. The 95 movie doesn't exist. But
Thank you.
We can go comics. Yeah.
Explain,
Dredd
Daniel.
Have a face.
No, him. Oh. You cut him off. What would they rip off?
Well, just the look of the city with the cars and the industrial crappy wrecked down city. It was just looked like Dredd.
Oh yeah, I mean, and we have
not the good one from 2012, the bad one.
Well, Mega City One, thank you.
Mega City One, yes.
And to your point, at one point, to get away from the cops, they drop down into the fog, and then it literally turns into Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally... We'll get to the fog, and then you just see the big kind of neon LED sign things come up, and you're just like... And later, the next morning, you have the Chinese restaurant pull up. Like, literally the scene where Deckard's getting ramen. The first scene of Blade Runner.
Oh, my God, I didn't even think of that.
And his apartment looks like a Sam Lowry's office in Brazil. It's, like, really compact and tight. And everything's in drawers.
And as a ripoff, the Ryan Gosling's apartment in 2049.
Yeah.
And then the scene
it
in.
It has the cat.
It has the cat.
Oh,
exactly.
You're right. And then Star Wars Attack of the Clones, when Anakin jumps down to land on a car or whatever, the. Yeah.
Well, done to the shitty CGI.
That's
literally a ripoff of Fifth Element, right?
No, that's more a ripoff of the Ghost in the Shell animated movie that came out.
Well, it's speaking of the Studio Ghibli bullshit
Ghost
of
the Shell,
of the goddamn ship, the ramen guy in the ship floating away, it was right out of a goddamn Studio Ghibli movie.
We can do this all day, folks.
Again, he thought he was making a masterpiece of a parody, I think.
This has never been done before.
This is never. I can't do French because I know French. I just do my dad's Dutch accent. Goddamn Belgians.
Talk like Inspector Clouseau, right?
The burger.
A hamburger. Steve Martin is... Steve...
Yeah, Steve Martin.
Steve Martin.
A hamburger.
Trying to do Peter Sellers, yeah.
Trying is the operative term in that context.
Yeah.
Chris, that's a bad movie. I saw that movie in theaters. I was like, I like Steve Martin. Then I was so sad. I had a very sad day that day. So
after she falls into his cab,
he kisses her when she's unconscious.
Please help.
Well, and then Dallas ends up taking her to a
big Ian boom.
Bada boom.
Bada boom.
Bada boom.
That scene takes 30 minutes.
Yeah, well.
Christ.
She ends up in Ian Holmes' priest apartment.
Right.
Who also faints.
Yes.
The priest is just like, oh, goddamn people.
Everybody faints in this movie.
And the priest sends Bruce away.
He does.
And then we get the immortal line, chicken good.
That's kind of it.
Didn't she learn English in like 2 minutes?
Well, she's looking up the Encarta of the future. Does anybody else remember Encarta?
The monitor actually says Hewlett Packard on it.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Swing and a miss,
Luke.
She
gets all the way to V.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then eventually looks up War because someone else has seen a sci-fi movie before.
That great band War. Lowrider still remains a good song.
Yeah. That was the one scene, though, where I was like, she's given a decent performance in this scene. She's crying, so that matters.
You're not wrong.
That was the one scene I was like, oh, this movie has something to it.
And H then, for Holocaust.
And then on to Chris Tucker, and I was like, oh, never mind.
So here's the thing. I give her credit because here she has nothing to do, right? Like, the movies that give her a lot to do, she's in... What's the terrible franchise she's in that's based on a video
Resident
game?
Evil.
Resident Evil. Those are hit and miss, but unfortunately, they're all put on her shoulders. No. So if it's a bad movie, it's even worse because she has nothing to do. Like, the scripts are always terrible. She's in that Ultraviolet movie, which is unwatchable garbage.
Is it wrong if I were to say the two best movies she's been in are Dazed and Confused and Zoolander?
And those she's barely in them, yes.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Dazed and Confused is also a movie.
Yes, that's right.
This is not... I'm not sure this is a movie, because it's kind of referencing too much, right? It's kind of just an elbow nudge away. It's kind of... If you were in a theater with a guy who was a film major, he'd be like, this is supposed to be Brazil. And all he you'd have a bruise on your shoulder the size of a dollar bill, just because he's like... Gah!
It is sci-fi in a blender, this movie.
Yeah,
that's true.
I don't know if it's supposed to be a homage or a love letter or a ripoff. I don't know.
French version of things.
Well, like somebody said, he wrote this draft. I think it was you that said this, Jeremy. He wrote the initial draft when he was like 16. And when you're 16, all you know is how to reference stuff.
So cool, he had a stack of movies from the video store and was like, huh. Yeah,
he was the first French subscriber to Fangoria. And he just...
Oh, there you go.
He just figured it. Or Starlog. Starlog. And he just figured shit out.
Dude, you know, considering some of the horror movies that have come out of France in the last decade, there are a lot of subscribers to Fangoria.
Martyr. That might be more than 10 years. Whatever. So from here, Bruce Willis has a half-naked chip wearing rubber bands who he takes to a priest. His little acolyte gets clothes from... God knows where. Hookers.
And because he's a former mercenary, they've already encountered this evil planet, and the president ordered missiles launched at it, which, have we mentioned that the president is Tiny Zeus Lester?
You keep doing it, in fact. You're good.
Okay.
You're good. You got this down.
That is the best goddamn decision this movie made.
I don't know. I'm pretty much...
What makes you say that?
Because it's Tiny Zeus Lester, and he's awesome.
And he's wearing, like, Star Trekian clothes.
I know.
He does. He looks like an admiral out of, like, a later Star Trek movie. Like, it's really...
Next Generation.
And he's so put upon by everything. He has to listen to people he doesn't want to listen to. You know, and a priest is like, I wouldn't do that. The priest turns out to be right, and he's like, oh, shit, the priest was right. Like, he holds his head in his hand for half the movie. He literally is the most put upon person in this whole movie, and he does nothing but sit in a chair. Like, they filmed his scenes in 2 days, and he's just put upon and drinking champagne. And the second he gets his glass of champagne, they're like, I'm sorry, sir, but they've launched a missile at us, and he has to put his champagne down. Like, he has the worst day. And his last line is talking to Bruce Willis's mom.
Yes, it is.
The ridiculous
it was the most
mom.
Put upon Jersey woman. He's like, you never call. Your Aunt Debbie's dying with cancer.
The president's an idiot.
You don't sound like a moron. You could have brought me on the trip. You could have.
Well, the whole thing about that is mercenary forces rig Dallas to win some annual trip to this paradise planet.
They rigged the
they
took him down to the paradise city.
They have to go to the paradise. Because
where the grass is green and the girls are pretty?
Because we learned that's where the stones are.
Right. Yeah,
and he was in the military because pictures on the shelf.
Yes.
Yes.
And only Bruce Willis is allowed to have stones in this movie. So,
when Bruce Willis cared.
I don't know
cared.
How they figured out that the stones were in paradise. They just kind of knew that.
Well, the priest told them, right?
No. Lilu told them they didn't trust humanity, so that they sent the fifth element separate from the other stones, and that blah, blah, blah. This is where it gets really hoobajoob aliens, where, like, there's just names that are flung at you. Mm-hmm. Because I had subtitles on, and it literally at one point said she's speaking, quote, divine language, because why not?
I remember that.
And so we're sent to the Space Bahamas, whatever, to see an opera singer with tentacle hair. right?
Oh, the Twi'lek opera
the blue, singer? The blue singer, yeah.
Who's the only other person in the universe, literally the only person in the universe that these aliens trust, these guardian aliens trust.
Luc Besson's wife, apparently. Or then wife or then girlfriend or something.
Luc Besson has weird fetishes.
Okay, I just want to make this point. Enva Mula is the opera singer that actually sings that song.
That was amazing.
Amazing.
That was really cool.
Yeah. And that's one of my favorite parts of this whole movie. And I don't know if you guys have seen it, but like they said that this couldn't be sung by a human voice. And has everyone seen that Chinese opera singer that did it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have.
Yeah.
I saw that video. Not, it was an extra. I bought this.
It's awesome.
I bought this on Vudu and it came with all the special features and they had a video of her singing it. She's incredible.
Right.
That
at the time, she actually made opera like kind of cool.
Well, they 90s remixed it.
It's a hip hop opera thing.
And then it became a Moby song.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, well, it made opera kind of cool at the time.
I tell you what,
that was a good
that song. Was the that and Gary Oldman sweating black were the only things I remembered.
There was another guy who sweat black earlier in the movie.
Yeah.
That's all I remembered. Her singing and Bruce Willis reaching into her cavity and taking out stones. That and then Gary Oldman going and sweating black were the only things I remembered before I saw this again.
We've barely mentioned Gary Oldman's role in this movie, which I feel like we need to, and now's as good a time as any. He's also looking for the stones, the four element stones, on behalf of whatever this great evil planet is. And there's actually that long monologue he gets about how destruction is really creativity, and then he almost chokes to death on a cherry pit.
Yeah. And then that could have been the end of the movie.
The priest.
Oh, yeah. He has Ian Holm forcibly taken to his office. So,
well, and then you had this weird, like, crowded scene satire kind of thing where everyone tries to get on this one spaceship to try to...
to try and get there. First, it's whoever Ian Holm's assistant is. Then it's Bruce Willis actually shows up. Then it's some alien in a hollow mask.
It's what are they called, like the Morgadorbs or whatever,
something like that.
What was the name of that race?
Oh, hey, Rick, it's the Morgadorbs.
But that's what it is. Like, this is Rick and Morty in a nutshell. But they look like shaved dog Ninja Turtle things, right? Because they're like they're Ninja Power Turtle Ranger brown things. With like the mouth, but then they have floppy ears like bulldogs. Like it's a mess of a sci-fi world, man.
I don't know, Rick. I don't think we should be selling them weapons.
Morty just bangs some spaceship. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of weird sex in this movie, too. I thought
the animatronics was kind of cool.
The costumes were neat.
Yeah. I like the practical stuff in here.
The practical effects are great. Gary Oldman's hat is weird, but otherwise...
I want one.
What? You mean just like a dollop of hair and then like a thing?
I want it. Yeah, I'm going to bring it back.
And just try to speak like you don't know the language, but you've heard of it.
Hey, he had one of the coolest guns in movie history.
That was neat. It was a Swiss Army gun?
Yes. It kind of borrowed from that weird gun in Beverly Hills Cop 3, but...
Yes! Oh my God! Much. The one with that Balky sells him. So first you hit this button and it's just...
Yeah.
I love Balky Bartakamoose. What a great character. So,
except for the red button, and it kills them all.
He's just such a smug son of a bitch.
Kills all the orcs, right? I don't know.
Yeah, the orcs. Yeah. You know what they are.
Why did they push the red button again?
Because they saw a glowing red fucking button.
And he didn't tell them what it was.
No.
You're right. Okay.
We also need to mention...
It's a Ren and Stimpy gag.
Yes.
The red shiny button!
We also need to mention at this point, once Bruce Willis gets on this space cruise ship thing, one of the most infamous characters come out of this movie... Rudy Rod.
Chris Tucker.
It's clearly like it. I think he's amazing in the roles, what he's trying to be, but it made me mad because it's so trying to be like Prince, and it's not. It's not Prince.
Well, that's the joke, though.
He's not, yeah,
know, they asked but, Prince,
and he's obsessed with Prince in real life, so it makes sense.
Right, it does.
Well, it's Prince plus some VJ like Kennedy from like 1998.
Yeah. Well, he was playing Chris Tucker like. On speed, essentially.
Right. And he always has the NSYNC microphone in his ear, and his hair gets more ridiculous.
Hair.
Well, his hair changes color in every scene.
It changes color and it changes pattern and it changes everything.
That explains the oral sex scene subtext.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah.
Subtext is a strong term.
That's true.
The scene when he's nailing the flight attendant, that is literally a liftoff metaphor, a taking off metaphor, an insertion metaphor.
Explosion metaphor.
Yeah. Cinematic genius, really. I see what he was going for.
It doesn't take Fellini to figure out these metaphors, guys. It's like that Family Guy scene where the train goes into the tunnel, then backs up, and then goes back into the tunnel.
Didn't they do a joke like that on Naked Gun? Anyway.
They sure did.
Yeah.
And The Simpsons, and it turns into sausage, and just a sausage making video.
Better movies.
Here's the thing. Chris Tucker is a cartoon of the movie, and it I don't know if it works. It throws off the rest of the movie because Bruce Willis doesn't have a sense of humor in his body. Like, he doesn't. Yeah. And that's why I think Die Hard works, because crazy shit is happening and he's like, he's literally just like Mondays. Like, he throws up his hands like he doesn't get it. So when Chris Tucker steamrolls through this movie, it's like a speed bump, and I was thrown clear. Like, I was like, oh, this isn't a movie anymore.
Are we green? Are we green? I miss the days when Bruce Willis cared.
Oh, yeah. That's been a long time, hasn't it?
It's been at least 10 years, maybe more.
And the thing is, you realize this situation happens a lot. What was that Kevin Smith movie?
Oh, Cop Out.
Cop Out, because it's the same movie, different black guy, but he's the same bored white guy the entire time.
He's the angry, cranky white guy.
Yeah. He's the angry, cranky white guy from Jersey, and his mom grew up in a Queens dumpster somewhere.
They even make a joke of it in this movie, because Ruby's trying to talk to him and goes, Corbin, what do you say? Great.
Yeah, it's good. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're paying me to rebuild my basement.
Thrilled.
Almost choke is it Rudy or Ruby?
Ruby Road.
Ruby Road.
I thought it was Rod.
Rod. No, you're right. Right. Rod.
Ruby Rod.
R-H-O-D.
It's a porn star name. Yeah.
Either way, there's that scene where one of the most famous people in the galaxy is almost randomly choked to death by Bruce Willis, and there's no like security around him.
I do love the idea, like that scene where we're introduced to him, where he's signing those like Japanese girls' pictures by just grabbing a red paintbrush, painting on their pictures, and then grabbing a champagne flute and going, girls, and just walking off to nail a flight attendant.
Yeah.
It's kind of great. But again, he's in a different movie from the rest of the movie.
We're better that he's was in a different movie than the rest of this movie, because I could picture them like doing a Walter Cronkite with this character, and it just wouldn't work.
So since we're all being a schmuck on Bruce, rightfully so, who would have been the better casting choice than Bruce Willis? 1998 action movie. Who's better?
Keanu.
A year before The Matrix, I'd have bought it. He's a sexy motherfucker. This is 3 years after Speed. I'd do it.
Was Stallone still relevant enough to be in it?
No.
No.
But a washed up Stallone might be good. Like, down on his. A year before The Mummy might be good.
Could be good.
I was thinking down on his luck, Jean-Claude Van Damme. This came out the same year as Sudden Death.
Oh boy.
But I mean, I just believe him as, because I want the grit of being broken as a person, and he can I was gonna say deliver a joke, but he can't because no one will understand it. But Luc Besson understands French, so you're still in. I don't know, like, the thing is, you're right, Bruce Willis is kind of the weakest part of this movie, even though it's his movie.
Yeah, he's playing his usual character in this movie.
Keanu might be the best bet, honestly, because Keanu can be funny. I've seen Point Break.
Oh, yeah.
Bill and Ted.
I could have seen John Travolta, maybe.
Travolta would have. Nick Cage! There's your answer!
Nick!
Why wasn't 98 Nick Cage in this?
He'd be trying to stab the opera singer before she was dead. Yeah. I gotta get the Stones out of you! He's looking at his ticket.
We have to find the Constitution, guys.
The ticket's trying to tell me something. It's inside the opera singer.
We have to steal the Constitution.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler, by the way. The Stones are all inside of this diva.
Yeah. So the bad guys show up. The McGlorbigorb's shooter.
Oh, jeez, Rick.
And the Stones are inside her. So they pull the... Bruce Willis is like, inside you? I don't understand. And he's like, oh, literally inside you. And he reaches his hand and comes out covered in blue goo.
It's like Zoolander, inside the computer.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
He figures it out because he just fucking figures it out. He's like, I got nothing else. Hey, a stone.
Well, then there's a pretty cool action scene, too, throughout where, he shoots an outline of Rudy in order to prevent him from being killed, and he falls through the floor and all sorts of fun stuff.
So oftentimes when we talk about actors on this movie, we talk about their audition scene, right? Like the only scene where they have passion when they deliver it.
Right.
This is the other way around. This is the pitch scene. That's the scene how you get Bruce Willis. You're going to have a shootout with space guns and aliens and a loud person making sarcastic comments. Because this is the scene that reminded me the most of Die Hard. He comes out of the elevator. He has small guns. They have massive guns, and he's picking them off. He's tricking them.
Yep.
That's the John McClane scene.
Yep, that was the John McClane scene.
Jovovich then with the karate scene where she's beating up all the McGlorp fields.
And that's where they're like, she should beat a video game movie that has no point, and thus she's made 12 other movies.
Oh boy,
people love Die Hard. Die Hard 2200. You know,
I'd rather do that than Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard, frankly, which is unwatchable.
Good day to Die Hard. Good day to Die Hard. Unwatchable.
Are you talking about the one where the hackers are involved? That one was okay.
I liked that one. That's my favorite Die Hard sequel. Don't kill me.
You're fine. I mean, here's the thing. I just want him kicking ass. And if he's kicking ass, you could make a supercut of all of them where he's kicking ass.
You could.
Sometimes there's a good bad guy. Often there isn't. But he just needs to be motivated. The problem is he hasn't tried in 10 years other than somehow Wes Anderson got him to try.
Yeah.
Yep.
Since
and Shyamalan.
Moonrise Kingdom and Looper were in the same year, and I think it was like, that's it, 2 in 1 year.
I'm done. He's like, that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is not going to outact me. I saw a third rock from the sun, goddammit.
I thought the last time he tried was Sin City, really.
Sin City was pretty good in.
Yeah.
Some
shining performances for sure.
That was the last time either him or the director tried, so that's good on them. Now the director just wants everyone to be a prostitute or a Muslim terrorist, so you're good.
Are you talking about Frank Miller?
Talking about Frank Miller, and the director is...
Robert Rodriguez?
Who did the sequel?
It was still Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
What am I thinking?
Tarantino co-directed the first Sin City.
Right. Robert Rodriguez really hasn't tried since then.
I'm thinking of Frank Miller, though. Okay. Frank Miller hates women and terrorists.
So, anyways, they get the stones.
Thank you.
They get the stones, and Bruce, they evacuate because...
Zorg said it to explode.
Yeah, Gord said a bomb to explode. But he comes back even though he set the bomb and he somehow dies.
He grabbed the chest that he thought had the stones in it. The stones weren't in it, so he had to go back.
But he should have been grabbing the Diva's chest. Girl! Nice. So they finally get to the temple and get the stones.
The temple on Earth.
Right, yeah. The temple on Earth.
It's the Great Pyramids, which are still standing. Right.
They still can't figure out how to make the stones work.
Right, and then it becomes a Legend of Zelda puzzle. They have to get the right stone to the right place, and they have to activate them. There's the wind temple, which you activate by blowing on it. The water temple, which you activate by crying on or sweating on it.
How come they didn't let Ruby Rod do the blowing stone? He's obviously demonstrated he's skilled at it.
Well, or get the stones off.
Truth.
I have no fire! I have no fire, Corbin!
My man Corbin.
I tell you what, he's the only one who had a character. Him and the priest had characters that developed.
Yes.
It was technically their movie because Bruce Willis is the same at the beginning and the end. He's just kind of a prick who misses his ex-girlfriend and then he's like, she'll do. Mila Jovovich will do. That's the production note. And then fire, we get a single match, which for some reason I remember Chris Tucker blowing out by mistake.
I did remember. Me too.
Is that a continuity error?
That's
it. Proves there's a multiverse and bullshit.
Mandela effect.
Mandela effect. Yeah.
Look that shit up.
Don't look that shit up.
But yeah, I know. I remembered him blowing it out too, but that and it, did
it
not
didn't happen. But at the last minute, the fiery kind of black hole meteor thing going to Earth is extinguished because Mila Jovovich kind of first bases it with Bruce Willis, and they say they love each other, and then she turns, like, shoots a laser beam out of her mouth and blows it out of the sky.
Power of love.
She didn't want to do it at first because she found war in the dictionary, right. Which she said made her feel like...
humans destroy everything. There's nothing worth saving.
Humans are not worth saving.
Bruce talks her...
Bruce Willis is worth saving.
Basically, the final episode of Captain Planet. Humans are not worth saving.
Basically, every episode of Captain Planet. Okay. Are humans worth saving? Well, these five kids are, plus maybe this green guy.
And then they bang freeze frame credits.
The president walks in on them banging.
Right.
Which... it was a total James Bond ending.
It was!
That, like, hyperbolic chamber, and they're, you know, having sex in there, and then... it's like, well,
not,
it was another guy.
They're not that, ready.
Yeah, there was another guy that looked in there for the president. It's like, oh, they're not ready.
Why is there pervy people everywhere? I mean, it's real life, of course.
Did you not go outside?
I mean,
have you not been on a dating? Well, no, you haven't.
No, I haven't been on a dating.
I've heard of the internet.
But I mean, like, here's the thing. The military guy, when they first make Mila Jovovich, is like, I need pictures for the archive. And you're just like, we don't need a masturbation joke in a PG-13 movie. We don't.
Do. Would have helped if it was a joke.
I used to have wind in me, and then you took the wind out of me. But
there's no subtlety in this film.
No. It's kind of the most on-the-nose thing ever.
It screams in your face the whole time.
Thanks, Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
Do you understand the metaphor that I'm putting in your face? The stewardess he's nailing, not only is the flight attendants, the ground control guys, the military guys, and the captain talking about what they're doing like it's the movie Airplane, but her feet are sticking out like she's the Wicked Witch of the West, and when she has an orgasm, her toes curl back and her legs rescend back into the portal.
Yeah.
Luc Besson has had sex one time and then he read about it in stories. Part of this is like a Dear Penthouse, I can't believe this happened to me letter. Like,
Christ.
The McDonald's girl has a corset on, for Christ's sake.
Well, they do that in France.
No, they don't.
The guys getting the food were also hitting on her or doing something pervy as well.
Yeah, not... Yeah. Not Joey
this
Pants
is clearly
was
an alternate
like,
future that has not faced its Me Too movement yet.
Yes.
Hashtag them too. Here's the thing. We survived this movie. I think it's rewatchable. Well, okay. Let's do final judgments. We'll go around the horn this way. Lauren, what were your final thoughts?
No, legit. I was entertained. I mean, for an hour and a half, is it the best movie? Definitely not, but it kept me entertained. The opera singer for me was the best part. And that and Chris Tucker were the absolute best parts. But yeah, it'll definitely, it's worth seeing a few times, and especially if, you know, it's a rainy Sunday kind of day, which is exactly when I watched it. I think it's really good for that. It's better than I remember, but still not great. Yeah.
I think it's a perfectly acceptable piece of entertainment. I mean, it's dumb, but you could do a lot worse than this one, and we've done a lot worse than this one. I mean, it's at least trying. I mean, it's stuck in first gear with all the sci-fi tropes that it has, and it so is pretending like it's a lot smarter than it is, but I don't know. There's still a passion about it that I liked, and Luc Besson clearly cared a lot about what he was making, which most people these days don't even bother to pretend like they care. So I don't know. If it's ever on cable, and like Lauren was saying, it's a rainy Sunday, you can do a lot worse than this.
Yeah. Jeremy?
Yeah, it's... I didn't like it when I first saw it, and pretty much avoided it because of that later on, but watching it again, it's a movie that asks you to get on board with a lot of ridiculous stuff, and if you're on board with it, it's fun. But if you, you know, after the first 10 minutes, if you're like, this isn't for me, then you're not going to like it. So, you know, just go with the craziness and have fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I went into the movie I saw it for the first time today. I went into the movie thinking it was going to be this deep, philosophical, sci-fi, profound masterpiece. I knew nothing about the film. About 30 minutes in, you find out it's this really fun kind of sci-fi romp that kind of homage or rip off a lot of old sci-fi films. I'd say it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's turn your brain off entertainment. Gary Oldman's your villain. Chris Tucker is super Chris Tucker. So, I mean, yeah, it's a fun time. I check it out.
God. See, the thing is, you're all right. I just, I watched this when I was in, eighth grade, seventh grade, whatever it came out, in my buddy's basement at like a sleepover because he thought it was smart. First of all, he's wrong. This isn't smart. Well, maybe he's just not smart. Whatever. Here's the thing. I don't understand this movie. I don't think he understands this movie. It's a fun movie. I don't know what it is. I might have to rewatch it. It's rewatchable. I think that's what you guys all got.
Yeah.
That's the thing that it succeeds at. Everyone's so hyper in it. It's almost as though Bruce Willis is Superintendent Chalmers from The Simpsons. Like, the world is crazy and he's just trying to figure out what the f*** is happening. That might be the most interesting part of it, because he doesn't want to contribute to anything and he's forced to, which is why Die Hard works. That's kind of why this works too. The sci-fi in it is bullshit. The rest of it is just kind of weird. And you're just brought on a ride that someone thinks is funny that I'm just not sure I get the joke. So thumbs up, I guess. I don't know. I'm just as confused as I was before. When I saw it when I was a kid, I just thought I didn't get it. I still don't get it, honestly. So we only have one more regular episode in our season. Next week, we're doing a TV show. I'm not going to tell you what the TV show is, but I'll give you a hint. We talked about it this week. But next week, we enter a high fantasy world, and it's the only high fantasy world with both Tom Cruise and Antonio Banderas. So tune in next week and every future week when we put a bit of your past on trial.
And also, please check out Guys and Dolls at Act One Theater in Alpharetta this summer. Our own Darby on our podcast is in it. It's going to be an amazing show.
Do it. Plug yourself. You're plugged. Consider yourself plugged.
I'm plugged, yes.
And I'll be on Cineprov 4th of July when I do Rocky IV. Bye, guys. Thanks.
IOP Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!
Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.